The following podcast is from the weekly message at Summit Church in Upstate South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Thanks for giving up that hour of sleep and still showing up here. Really glad to have you here this morning. We continue our journey through the life of Joseph. And my assignment, I love to be part of the teaching team here, and the schedule is planned out ahead of time, and so I get given a text to teach. And last week, Kyle had Genesis 45 and helped us understand how things played out when Joseph's family returned and Joseph got to meet his brothers. And I get 46, 47, 48, and 49. So Kyle took about 40 minutes to cover 45 last week, so I'm planning for you to be out by about 2 o'clock. Let me just tell you how we're going to approach this. I've been thinking about it kind of like taking you through an art gallery. There's four rooms we're going to look at. I'm just going to give you a snapshot of 46, 47, 48, and 49, tell you what's in the room. Like, okay, these are Renaissance painters, these are cubists, these are postmodern painters, these, just to give you a sense of what's there. And then we're actually going to step into each of the rooms, and we're going to look at a little thing in each of the rooms. So I need you to understand, we're going to take a big overview and see where the story's going, and then I'm going to dip in and we're going to look at a couple of particular things because I think there might be something valuable to us in taking a little closer look. Where are we in Joseph's story? If you've been traveling with us for a while, then you know, how did he get here? Joseph starts the son of the family of promise. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, this is, God is doing something in this family of promise, and ultimately, growing up in the family of promise, Joseph is he's the favorite son of his father, but his brothers don't like him for that reason. And like his father and his father's father and his father's father's father, they hear from God. And Joseph hears from God, and he shares his dreams, and nobody likes it. His brothers don't like it. His dad doesn't like it. So he gets sold into slavery, purchased by Potiphar in Egypt. There he tries to faithfully do what he's supposed to do, and he gets falsely accused and thrown in prison. While serving faithfully, he's left there in prison for a period of time and given work to do. Can't just be a good prisoner. He has given assignments and work to do, and God is with him in the prison. Ultimately, the Pharaoh sends two prisoners, special prisoners who offended Pharaoh, and they're now put in Joseph's charge. He interprets their dreams and tells them, just please do what you can to get me out of here because I don't belong here. And 2 years later, finally, he's brought out and he gets to interpret dreams for Pharaoh. And in all of that, now he's raised to a place of prominence. He now has an Egyptian wife. He has a family. He has children. He has power. Restoration and grace, it sounds like a great story. And last week, Kyle helped us understand how the brothers are coming back and the family is coming back and there's restoration and reconciliation. You can think, this is really just a great, good story. Yes, it is. But maybe there's more to it than that. And that's what I want to wrestle with this morning. Chapter 46, Jacob and, that is, Joseph's father, and their families head down to Egypt. And 46 just tells us about their journey as they head down to Egypt. Chapter 47 tells us how they settled in the land. And then they're given a prime piece of real estate because of Joseph's prominence and because of Pharaoh's favor. In chapter 48, just one snapshot of Jacob blessing Joseph's boys. Jacob says, I never thought I'd see them, never thought I'd see you. And so he blesses his boys. And then in chapter 49, Jacob blesses each of his sons, and then he dies. And 46, 47, 48, it's this move of everyone into Egypt. It is the restoration of the family. It is the blessing and the provision. And it's 17 years there captured in those four chapters. And Jacob blesses each of his sons and he dies. So what are we supposed to understand from Joseph's story? That's what we're journeying through, Joseph's story. How is Joseph's story playing out? I think it's easy to read Joseph's story simply like it's a happy ending to a difficult journey. It turns out really well. Joseph's life turns out for good, for the good of his family. Hardship ends up in blessing. And a lot of people read Joseph's story that way, and there's some truth to that. But I think there's more going on as this story of Joseph's life comes to an end. And so what I want to do is I want to visit a little bit with two of the people that are involved in Joseph's story and listen to how they're thinking, listen to what they're saying, because I think if we listen carefully to what's going on in their story, we might understand Joseph's journey, Joseph's story, a little bit different. As important as it is to get the big picture of Joseph's story and see how things play out, it might be helpful to listen to those who are living in the story. They might have something to tell us rather than just our conclusion. Good story, right? Joseph treated badly and now he's really prominent. Joseph really ignored and now he's a place of blessing for others. Yes, but there's something more going on there. So we're going to dip in. You open a copy of the scriptures because I'm going to take you to a number of places in these four chapters. And we're going to start by listening to Jacob. And you might go, wait, this is Joseph's story. Yes, but it's not simply about him. So let's start Genesis 46. We're just going to look at a few verses and see if we can't hear something from Jacob. In chapter 46, verse 30, interesting statement. Jacob slash Israel, his name has changed. Sometimes in the account he's referred to as Jacob, sometimes he's referred to as Israel. It's the same guy. Jacob never thought he'd see Joseph again. And when the brothers said, chapters 43, 44, that Joseph, your son, is alive in Egypt, Jacob didn't believe it. But now he's there, and look at what he says in 46, 30. Israel said to Joseph, now let me die, since I've seen your face and know that you are still alive. That's an interesting thing, because it's not the first time that Jacob said, no, I'm going to die. When Joseph was first perceived to have died, when the brothers pretended he had been killed, Jacob said, I'm just going to die. When they took Benjamin into the land, Jacob's assessment was, I'm just going to die. And now he sees his son Joseph, who he didn't think he'd ever see. And he goes, it's enough. Now I can die. And the thing is, he doesn't. He doesn't. He lives for 17 more years. Jacob thinks, now it's all over. Now I can die. When he meets Pharaoh, look, chapter 47. Joseph brings his father to meet Pharaoh. And we're going to listen to what Jacob has to say about his life here. Chapter 47, verses 7 and following. Then Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and stood him before Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, so how many are the days of your years of your life? And Jacob said to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life. And they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers and the days of their sojourning. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from the presence of Pharaoh. Now that's an interesting assessment, that here now in the land with Joseph, he looks back on his life and he says, few and unpleasant. This is how I sum up my life. It's been a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day and very bad year and very bad life. That's what he's saying. Few years, it's been unpleasant. So yes, it's been hard. It's been hard for Jacob, but this is his assessment. What's really surprising is when we turn the page and go to chapter 48 and listen to Jacob as he ends up praying for Joseph's boys. So we're now in chapter 48. I want to pick up in verse 8. Joseph is bringing his boys. Jacob's getting to the end of his days. He knows he's going to die soon. This is 17 years after he's in the land. And Joseph brings his two boys, Manasseh and Ephraim, before Jacob to pray for them, to bless them. Here's what we read, chapter 48, verse 8. When Israel, Jacob, saw Joseph's sons, he said, who are these? And Joseph said to his father, they are my sons whom God has given me here. And Jacob said, bring them to me that I may bless them. Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age so that he could not see. So Joseph brought them near him and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel, Jacob, said to Joseph, I never expected to see your face. And behold, God has let me see your offspring also. Then Joseph removed them from his knees, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth, and Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand towards Israel's right hand, and brought them near to him. Do you understand what he's doing? He's taking his firstborn and moving the firstborn towards Jacob so that Jacob's right hand would fall on Joseph's firstborn, and his left hand would fall on Joseph's secondborn, because typically the blessing would go to the firstborn. So that's what Joseph is doing. Verse 14, and Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on the head of Ephraim, who was the younger, and his left hand on the hand of Manasseh, crossing his hands, for Manasseh was firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, the God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this very day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless these boys. And in them let my name be carried on in the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. What is this? This seems very different than few and unpleasant have been my years. He's going, well, God, that is the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, he's been watching over me, he has shepherded me all of my days, and his messenger, his care for me resulted in me being spared from all evil. Seems like Jacob is thinking a little differently here. What is that? It seems so different. It's God. He says, God has been with me and shepherded me and kept me from evil. He's lived for 17 years in Egypt. He didn't die seeing Joseph. Apparently, there was something more for Jacob in these 17 years. He ended up blessing Pharaoh. He ends up blessing Joseph's boys. He ends up blessing all of his life. I mean, all of his descendants. But this is right. This is how Jacob should have been thinking all along, because all the way back in Genesis 27, when his father Isaac prayed for Jacob, he said, blessing is coming through you. In fact, God speaks to Jacob in Genesis 28. Let me just read to you Jacob's encounter with the Lord in Genesis chapter 28. God says this to him. The Lord, Jacob has a vision. He's sleeping on his way, fleeing, and God meets up with him in Genesis 28, starting in verse 13. Behold, Yahweh, the Lord, stood above the clouds where Jacob was seeing this vision and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with you, and I will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I've promised you. Sounds like Jacob's remembering that as he prays for Joseph's boys. Sounds like it's coming back home to him. The Lord intended to bless Jacob. The Lord intended to make him a great nation. The Lord intended to bless others through Jacob's life. Why would he say, few and unpleasant have been my years? Because he didn't remember that. But now, 17 years later, as he's about to die, he's remembering some of that. God had plans for Jacob that Jacob didn't fully understand, he didn't fully recognize. And now, as he's looking back, he's realizing, well, God has been shepherding me. He didn't think, he said, I didn't think I would see you, Joseph. I didn't think I would see the boys. I didn't have any idea how this was going to play out. And now he's going, oh my goodness. The God of Abraham and Isaac has been shepherding me all of these days. And it's not been pleasant, but he has kept me from evil. Jacob is seeing things differently. He has a growing understanding of his own life as he's coming to the end of his days. So I'm watching Jacob as he's living in these years, in these four chapters, and seeing some things. And then I started to listen to, how's Joseph thinking about his own life? So let's listen to Joseph. From last week, we know that when the brothers showed up, he can say to them, God sent me here. God has done this great thing. In chapter 47, verses 11 and 12, Joseph settles his family in the best of the land. And then in 47, look with me, in 47, 29 through 31, there's an interesting thing that happens. What's going on here? So Jacob has come with his family, and they have all settled in the land, and there they are where they belong. Joseph is providing for them because he has, in fact, been made ruler over Egypt, over all of the, basically all the known world except under Pharaoh, but he's prominent and a ruler. And look at what happens in the exchange between Jacob and Joseph in chapter 47, verse 29. When the time drew near that Israel, Jacob, must die, he called his son Joseph and said to him, if now I have found favor in your sight, put your hand under my thigh and promise to deal kindly and truly with me. Do not bury me in Egypt, but let me lie with my fathers. Carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burying place. And Joseph answered and said, I will do as you have said. And then Jacob says to him, swear to me that you'll do this. And so Joseph swore to him. And then Israel bowed himself on his head of his bed. I have to ask, why is it that Dad wants Joseph to swear you're going to take me back to Canaan? I think that's a puzzling thing. He said, I want you to do this. Joseph goes, I'll do that. Jacob goes, that's not enough. You need to swear to me that you're going to do this. Is it possible? I'm just trying to think this through. Is it possible that Jacob is concerned that Joseph has found his home in Egypt? I think so. He's been there for almost 3 decades of his life. Joseph has found himself in Egypt. In chapter 48, verse 4, Jacob is speaking to Joseph and says that God told me that he will make of me a great nation and make me a company of peoples and will give this land of Canaan to my offspring forever. That's where they're supposed to be. So why does Jacob have to get Joseph to swear you're going to take me back? I wonder if it's because Joseph is not quite committed to that. And then there's this interesting exchange that they have in chapter 48, just a little later. We read the account of him praying for Joseph's boys. Look with me in chapter 11, after he's prayed for Joseph's boys, 15 and 16, verse 17. Jacob has prayed with his hands crossed. He's prayed and blessed Ephraim over Manasseh. And picking up in chapter 48, verse 17, when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. And he took his father's hand to move it from Ephraim's head into Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to his father, not this way, my father. Since this one is the firstborn, put your right hand on his head. But his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. He shall also become a people, and he also shall be great. Nevertheless, his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his offspring shall become a multitude of nations. So he blessed them that day, saying, by you Israel will pronounce blessings, saying, God make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh. Thus he put Ephraim before Manasseh. And then Israel said to Joseph, behold, I am about to die, but God will be with you and will bring you again to the land of your fathers. There's some interesting things going on here. First thing to notice is it says that Joseph was displeased. If you've been living in the life of Joseph, that should just smack you against the forehead. Like, what do you mean he's displeased? You mean, this is the only time in Joseph's life that we're told he was displeased. It doesn't say when his brothers hated him, Joseph was displeased. Now, he might have been, but we're never told that. It's never brought to the surface. When he shared his dream with his father and his father dismissed him, it doesn't say Joseph was displeased. It doesn't say when he got sold into slavery, Joseph was displeased. It doesn't say when he was falsely accused and thrown into prison, Joseph was displeased. It doesn't say when the cupbearer and the baker forgot him and ignored him. It doesn't say Joseph was displeased. When he was left there for 2 years, it doesn't say Joseph was displeased. When finally he gets brought out, it doesn't say Joseph was displeased. It never tells us Joseph is displeased until this text. When Dad does this crossed arm thing, and it's a really strong word. It means, you've done me evil. He's displeased. You've done me. And I kind of go, what's the big deal? And then he responds to his father. When the father has his hands crossed, he says to his dad, not so. That's an interesting expression. It appears twice in the book of Genesis and Exodus. Once here, and once when Moses is speaking to Pharaoh, you know, this is like next book, right? Moses is speaking to Pharaoh about letting the children of Israel out of Egypt. And when Moses explains what needs to happen, we need all to go out, all of us, all our lambs, all our cattle, all our people. Pharaoh says those two words, not so, never going to happen. That's how Joseph is responding to his dad. And you have to kind of go, what's with Joseph in this moment? He's displeased and he tells his dad, not so. It's not supposed to happen that way. And you have to wrestle with, so what's going on with Joseph? Why does he respond that way? Why does Jacob have to tell him, I'm going to die, but God's going to be with you and bring you back to the land of your fathers. I don't want to make too much of this, but it's startling to me to see Joseph respond to his father this way. Is it possible that now that Joseph has seen his dreams fulfilled, right? Dreams about the brothers bowing down. Now that he didn't know how that was going to play out for most of his life until the brothers showed up. Now that he's seen it played out, is it possible Joseph thinks he now knows what's going on? I got this. This is how it's going to play out from here. I'm here in Egypt. Dad goes, no, you're not. You're going back. And my boys should be blessed. And Jacob goes, but not the way you think they're going to be blessed. And I wonder if part of what's going on here is, I don't want to read my own thoughts in the story, but I want to try to make sense of what's really happening, how the people in the story are living in the story. Jacob, at times, reads his life through his own experiences. Few and unpleasant have been my years. But then there are times when he catches a glimpse, not fully sees it, but he catches a glimpse and can say, God has been my shepherd. And he catches a glimpse and he says, he's preserved me from evil. And he catches a glimpse and says, I'm about to die, but God, Joseph, God is going to take you back to the land of your fathers. That's where you belong. So Jacob catches a glimpse. I think Joseph, as we've been reading his story, has recognized God's hand in his life. He said to his brothers, you intended it for evil, but God intended it for good. He sent me. The Lord has made me ruler. The Lord has given me sons. But then there are times when I wonder if Joseph is missing it, not seeing it quite clearly. I wonder if he's settling into Egypt a little too much and not realizing that God is doing something else. And that's the reason why Jacob has to remind him. And here's the thing. Here's where this is all taking me. As I'm walking through these chapters and I'm watching Jacob's conversations and what he has to say, watching Joseph's conversations and what he has to say, I think if I read Joseph's story as if it's about God doing something in Joseph's life to fix Joseph's difficulties, I miss what's going on. Do you understand? It's a long journey that they're on. And I think that sometimes I can read Joseph's story and I think it's really just about how God is doing good things for Joseph. And I don't think that's really what's going on. All the way back in Genesis chapter 15, God is speaking to another guy. His name's Abraham. And in chapter 15, let me just read to you a little bit about what God says to Abraham. Chapter 15, verse 1, after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision, saying, fear not, Abraham, I am your shield. Your reward will be very great. I am the Lord who brought you out of the Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land, verse 7, give you this land to possess. And then he explains to Abraham, know for certain, chapter 15, verse 13, know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs and will be servants there. And they will be afflicted for 400 years. But I will bring judgment on the nation that they serve, and afterward they will come out with great possessions. As for you yourself, you shall go to your fathers in peace, and you shall be buried in a good old age, and they shall come back here in the fourth generation. So you know what this means? This means Joseph's story is not about Joseph. Jacob's story is not about Jacob. Abraham's story is not about Abraham. Friends, your story is not about you. But I tend to think that. I read Joseph's story and I go, oh, he goes through really hard things and then God turns it for good. So isn't that what we should be taking from Joseph's story? Maybe, maybe not. This is not merely a happy ending to a difficult journey. Because the reason what God is doing in Jacob's life and Joseph's life is not fundamentally about making Joseph's life happier, making Joseph's life better. Jacob didn't see it all, but he got a glimpse now and then. Joseph saw some, but he doesn't fully grasp it. And friends, we know so much more about God's sovereign work in the world for his glory, and we lose perspective. I tend to think that the things that God is doing in my life is to make my life a better life for me. Y'all never feel that? Y'all never read Bible stories thinking that that's what it's about? that is the life you are living, the story that you are in, is not primarily about you. It's not. God's not committed to fixing your life to make it go the way you'd like it to go so that you have a happy ending. Now, does that sometimes happen? Yes, of course. But is that what God is doing? I think we become myopic. Think about your marriage. You got married because God's giving you your preferred future, right? God is doing the thing that you want him to do. God is going to make you happy. Sometimes. But sometimes in the midst of your marriage, there's all kinds of difficulties. And you cry out to God, what is this? This isn't what I wanted. I didn't want my brothers to hate me. I didn't want them to sell me into slavery. I didn't want to, but in the end, it turned out for my good. Well, you have to be really careful that you think that way, because Joseph went 30 years before he saw the ending come out that way. And even then, it wasn't about Joseph. I understand there are times when life is really hard. And if we wrongly think that God's in the business of fixing the hardship in your life because he's really all about you, that's really hard to live in relationship with the living God. Yes, in your marriage, it is. He's doing things in you and for you, but it's not primarily about you. Is it possible that there's things that he's doing in your marriage, in your relationship with your spouse, that in one sense has something to do with others that you can't even see yet? You're in a work situation, and it's one of those terrible, horrible, no good, very bad work situations. And you, God cannot be in this, because God's in the business of fixing my life so that my life goes the way that I want it to be, because God's committed to my happiness. But maybe, yes, should you work? Yes. If you don't work, you don't eat. Paul makes that really clear. Is your work part of how God's grace is coming to you? Yes. Is it part of his provision for you? Yes. Is he doing it because he's really all about fixing your life? I want to say maybe not. Maybe not. And that's one of the things that I'm beginning to live with as I move my way through Joseph's story. I don't always see what he's doing. And when I think that Joseph's story is about God making Joseph's life make sense, then I conclude that God should be doing that for me, and he doesn't always do that for me. Sometimes I don't see all that he is doing, and sometimes what he is doing is so far beyond the scope of my grasp that in the moment I would never see it. I would never see it. William Tyndale, the guy who translated the scriptures into English so that you have them in front of you, a great majority of the English Bible that you still read comes from Tyndale. He did such a massive job. Tyndale grew up in the cloth-making district of Gloucestershire, England. And you kind of go, so what? Well, when he began to translate the scriptures into English, the Roman king of England didn't like English translations of the scriptures, so he fled and had to leave the country because they were going to kill him. Ultimately, he was martyred. But he was going to sneak Bibles back into England. How did he do that? He smuggled them in bolts of cloth that came from Europe to the cloth-making district in England. That's how the English Bible. That's a really fascinating providence. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't think Tyndale was thinking, oh yeah, I know why I was raised in the Gloucestershire cloth-making area. I don't think he had a clue. I don't even think he had a clue when he first started to translate the scriptures. It wasn't until he was exiled and then he realized, oh my goodness, there is something God is doing in the midst of my life that I had no idea of. When I was ordained through the American Baptist Churches of the Pacific Southwest. In those days, in Southern California, that was a solid Bible-teaching conservative denomination in Southern California. A few years later, particularly on the East Coast, it went off its rails. It just got weird, strange. And I cried out to God, why did you let this happen? This makes no sense to me. I'm embarrassed about some of the stuff that the American Baptist churches are doing, particularly on the East Coast. It's like, why would you even let me be associated with that? And for years, I had no idea. That just bothered me. And then I took my very first mission trip. My very first mission trip, I went to the Karen people that live on Thai-Burma border. The Karen are a dispossessed people group. They've been at civil war with the Burmese since 1948. There's about 2 million of them live on Thai-Burma border. They have no national recognition. And a large majority of the Karen are believers. They're Christians. Big, significant Christian presence there. So we are going to be 2 weeks in the jungles on the border of Thailand and Burma to do what I believe to be the very first ever training for Baptist Christian leaders among the Karen. No one's done this before because it's really difficult to get there. We had to actually, Sue had to sign a document saying that if I was killed while I was overseas there, that she wouldn't ask my body to be brought back, because it's like, we're not supposed to be there. So we're there, and as we're ministering among the Karen, this really fascinating thing happens. A couple of the Karen elders come to Mike, who is our team leader, and they say to Mike, Mike, someone has been coming through the jungle teaching some things about the Holy Spirit that has really weirded our people out. And we need some clarification about that. But here's the thing. The Karen have a huge sense of history. They sing songs about those who first brought the gospel to them generations ago. And so before Mike can answer their questions, they ask Mike, so where are you from? Mike, tell us about your Christian history. Mike is a pastor of a Calvary chapel. Now, if you know anything about Calvary chapels, they're a relatively young denomination. And so as the elders of the Karen are listening to Mike give a little of his history, they look at him and go, you're not old enough, not personally in age. He goes, you have no roots. You can't speak to this for us because we need somebody with deep roots, because that's how they think about themselves. So Mike came to me and said, Brian, aren't you ordained with the American Baptist Churches? And I said, yeah. So what's the big deal? The gospel first came to the Karen through Adoniram Judson, who was an American Baptist missionary. They still think of themselves as the great-great-grandchildren of Adoniram Judson. So when the elders heard that I was ordained American Baptist and I was pastoring an American Baptist church, they looked at me and they said, you can answer this question for us. And I was like, I had no idea. Do you understand what I'm saying? My ordination was not about me. My ordination was about something God was going to do 5-6 years later in the jungles of Thailand, and there was no way I could see this. No way I could have known this. And friends, there are things that are going on in your life that you can't make sense of. But as long as, if you think that what God is doing is fixing your life and making your life happy life, then you're going to struggle in your relationship with the living God. But if you could just take a deep breath and step back and realize, Romans, Paul writes to Christians like you and me, says, God is working all things together for good to those who love him and are called according to his purpose. And I think the good is what's going on in my life. That is not what he's saying. The good is what God intends to do, what he is doing broadly, how he is putting his glory on display. In Ephesians chapter 2, Paul writes and says, for you have been saved by grace through faith, that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God. And we all say yes and amen to that. I didn't save myself, God saved me. To what end? Paul goes on to say, for you have been created in Christ Jesus for good works that he has prepared beforehand for you to walk in. And friends, the good works you are walking in might not be the things you think that would make your life happy, but it might be for the glory of God. I just want you to take a bigger look. If you're on the team, the coach knows how the game is going to be played. And if you're a good player, then you just let the coach call the game. If you're singing in choir, you might know your part, but if you're going to be a good choir member, you just let the choral director tell you when to come in and what to sing. If you're in a play, you learn your lines, but the director tells you where your entrances are and when your exits are and where you're going to stand on the stage, because the director knows what's going on. And brothers and sisters, God knows what he's doing. And it wasn't about Joseph's life, and it wasn't about Jacob's life, and it's not even about Abraham's life. It's about God. what's going on in your life is not just about you. It's about what God is doing. Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 12, that the thing that God is doing in the world is so magnificent, so breathtaking, that angels are literally standing on tiptoes to see what God is doing in the world and the lives of the saints. I can't imagine what he's doing in our lives. But listening to Joseph and watching Jacob and seeing the story play out, I take a big step back and I kind of go, oh my goodness, he is doing something for his glory that I can't even see. Maybe resting in that would be the way to live today. Maybe resting in that and letting go of this idea that he's making my life work, he's making my life good. No, he's making himself glorious in all kinds of unimagined ways. I think there's joy and freedom there, candidly. And I want to learn from Jacob and Joseph and Abraham and from you as we watch each other's story unfold. Let's pray. I know that you are a good God and that you do good to us, but I must confess that when I experience your blessings, I tend to think that's the end of it. That's what it's all about. That I'll have a happy life, that I'll have a blessed life, that it'll go good for me. And as we're living in the narrative that's Joseph's stories, my eyes see different things. And I'm awakened to my need. I hear Jacob's words to Joseph. Joseph, it's not about Egypt. I hear Jacob's words to Joseph. Joseph, it's not about the way you want your sons to be blessed. Joseph sees that God is doing something, but loses sight a little bit. I do too. Might you, by grace, stir in our hearts a growing confidence that by grace we have been created anew in the Son for good works that you have prepared beforehand, and we don't even know what those works might yet be, but it will be for your glory, and that is the supremely good. Amen.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. For more information about Summit Upstate and other available resources, check out our website at summitupstate.org.